What's going on, y'all? This is Mike Brown, and I want to welcome y'all to this week's episode of Art of Letting Go. We have a special guest on the show, and we are talking about Black men's health, not just mental health, but physical health, and how we can be more supportive to each other in our health journeys. So thank you guys for being here this week, and enjoy the show. What up? This is Mike Brown, and this is the Art of Letting Go. You are my second guest in New York, which is really cool. But also, this is your first time coming into the Art of Letting Go universe. We're kind of like Marvel.
Okay.
So like,
that's exciting.
You know, yeah. You come in a couple of times and who knows, you might end up getting your own season.
That's dope.
So I am not going to introduce you as your New York name of Crenshaw's girlfriend.
Oh my God.
Everybody, welcome Denise to the building.
Hey, what's up, Art of Letting Goers? Did you decide on like what the name Let Goers? I know y'all were having a conversation about that.
We're kind of Let Goers a little bit. Yanni Blue used Let Goers on the last episode. So I guess we're going to force Let Goers on you guys. Even if you don't want it, you're going to be the Let Goers.
Were there other options that resonated more with you?
Self-healers. But because I chose it.
Yeah. It's a little corny.
Yeah.
It's a little, and yeah. it doesn't match the brand as well.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing for you to think about.
So I think Let Goers is cool though. I like Let Goers. It sounds cool. People have like creative artists and stuff like that. But, you know, we made it work.
And it could evolve.
That's true.
There could be something that you're like, wait a second. This is what the community is actually.
And that's the thing. We're gonna let go and let it grow into whatever it grows into.
Yes.
Denise, how are you doing today?
How am I doing today?
Ooh. You can bring the mic a little closer.
There's a lot swirling around in my mind, but I'm so happy to be in this beautiful space. I can't stop looking at the sky.
Yeah.
It's just so brilliantly blue, and the sun and the trees and, you know, chilling with you. And so there's a lot kind of bubbling in my mind and things happening in myself and in the world, but I'm okay.
That's what's up. I'm glad to hear that.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, as I mentioned earlier this week, I had a rough day and it was a very human day. If I'm being so honest, I haven't questioned much since I've been on my trip, but I did have a day of just like, what is going on? Like, am I supposed to be in New York? Should I be looking for a job? Should I, you know, all these questions of like, am I doing the right thing? And I think every time that question has come up, I'm being shown that I'm doing the right thing. So
that's dope.
Yeah. So I'm really trusting the universe right now. I know people say that all the time.
Yeah.
But to actually be in it and doing it, I understand what that means.
You know what, though? I feel like sometimes when people say they're trusting the universe, what they don't realize they mean is that they're trusting themselves.
100%. Like, I am trusting what I believe will work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the universe also tests me in some ways of like, is this really what you want? Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, like, how far are you willing to go for this?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm passing every test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have been in places where I've had to question, you know, is the thing that I'm doing in this moment right for me? And as much as, you know, there's the trust the universe, trust myself, it's really the trust myself to figure out what the next move is if the thing that I'm doing doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or isn't working or stopped working. And the trusting, I can trust myself, and also I need to just, I think, be at peace with knowing that the transition from the thing that isn't working isn't immediate.
Yeah.
And it may take me a second to fully commit to moving on from something that isn't working. But I need to keep trusting that feeling of like, maybe this isn't working right now, and lean into whatever that is.
Yeah.
And figure out how to move from that. Yeah. Like trusting myself to, if this thing that I committed to and was like, all in.
Yeah.
Like being a nomad.
Yeah.
If at some moment that stops working for you, you're going to figure out what that means. You're gonna know whether it's time to start looking for a job.
Yeah. I feel like there's a flow of comfort and discomfort. Like there's a flow of finding comfort and then that comfort becoming uncomfortable and then mm-hmm. finding the next comfort.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
Ooh, being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Being uncomfortable. And then, you know, there have been so many times in my life where I just let myself stay uncomfortable because I didn't recognize that I had the power to change it.
Yeah.
And so I would like let myself be miserable. I was listening to the episode that you did with Yanni and that question you had about, or that somebody asked you, is suffering inevitable? Or mm-hmm. like, is that just a thing? And my first thought when I heard that was like, yeah, it's just a part of life. Because I was thinking with like a Buddhist mindset, like, you know, there is suffering. Mm-hmm. That's number one. That's first on his list, is there is suffering. But then you suffer more if you dwell on the suffering.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of second thought I was having, especially as your conversation around that evolved. And so I think I'm just learning to recognize where I'm keeping myself in an uncomfortable space
mm-hmm.
by not acknowledging my power and not acknowledging my agency.
Yeah.
And just getting better at that every time it happens. And also going to my therapist who has been practicing for, you know, over 20 years and is also a Buddhist meditation teacher.
Oh, wow.
And so I get a 2-for-1. I don't have a meditation practice right now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get back to yoga, but also being in silence and like intentionally slowing down.
Yeah.
And I used to meditate with a sangha that was people of color.
Oh, wow.
And so being in a meditative space and being with people of color and intentionally just kind of sitting with what was, and then being in community.
Yeah.
Those have helped me.
Did you guys know that we have a Patreon? What is a Patreon? Well, a Patreon is a place for our let-goers to be able to get exclusive content from the show and from your host, Mike Brown. I share a lot of music there. We're building a community of people who are healing and growing in real time. And it's not big right now, but I would love for more of you to sign up. It's only $3 a month. That's the lowest subscription I have, but you can go as high as you'd like. Sign up today and I will give you some free merch. Just make sure you include your address. I know that you just had a birthday. Does there ever feel like pressure to have kids or build a family?
I feel really fortunate that that's never been a thing that has been external. Like, so what I mean is I've never felt external pressure.
Yeah.
Not from my parents, not from family members, not from friends. I studied maternal health for my master's degree.
Oh, wow.
And so like I was studying global maternal health.
Yeah.
And then I moved, but after moving back to New York, after that, I was a little bit in like domestic maternal health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary. And yeah. It's not just scary for Black women, although being a Black woman is extra scary.
Yeah.
Like my Black girlfriends who have had children, every time they got really close to their delivery date, I would be so nervous until I heard from them that everything was good.
Yeah.
Until I heard from them they were safe and
yeah.
that their baby was safe, because it's real out here for Black women. But like I was telling somebody recently, I know too much about maternal health to want to do that. Also, just growing up in the, you know, 90s and early 2000s, you know, as an 80s baby, you were coming into your own with Self magazine and 17 and YM and all of these magazines telling you things like, you should have here are the 10 almonds you have for you, your 200 calorie snack. And so this body awareness and feeling like you needed to look a certain way. And for me, I'm just barely getting to a point where I can accept my body no matter what it looks like.
Yeah.
And the changes that your body goes through when you have a baby,
mm-hmm.
when you're pregnant, and then afterwards, none of that, you know, for all of my adult life, none of that, other than like being cute and pregnant and getting to eat whatever I want. That's the only part about like having children. And, you know, children could be cool.
Yeah.
But like being cute and pregnant is the only part I've really been interested in.
That's funny.
So I'm like, It's cool. And what I've made peace with recently, and I've been saying this for a few years, but it's really kind of been cemented in with the house cat, like the cat that has now kind of chosen us to be its family.
Yeah.
Is if I'm meant to parent somebody, like it's going to happen organically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally open to fostering.
Yeah.
And I'm totally open to being an adoptive parent, but I need enough stability in my life that I feel okay to take care of myself before
That's
I'm trying
fair.
To intentionally bring another life into that.
I understand that. I completely understand that.
What about you?
I am definitely open to having children. I used to be afraid of the idea of having kids because, oh, the world is so messed up. But just from being a teacher,
mm-hmm.
I feel like if anybody is able to bring a productive human into the world or to just raise one
yeah.
to be functional in society, yeah. I do feel like I could do it.
Okay.
I don't feel afraid of it.
You were saying that you're good at anything you try.
Right.
Just saying that. I respect that swagger.
Just pop up and be a dad one day and be great at it. Number one dad.
Why not? Why not? There are people with that mug who definitely aren't. So, you know?
And you know what? I think in giving my parents so much grace
mm-hmm.
for instilling in me all that they had.
Right.
Like, I have a whole lot. So I would love to give that to somebody else. Organically,
yeah,
as you said, like not for any other reason than it speaks to me,
yeah,
and I'm called to do it. But yeah, I don't feel a need to force it right now. But I would be very open to being a parent. I would.
Yeah, I could see a little like mini let go or running around practicing letting go with
might,
occasionally
that might,
blonde
that might
hair.
Be my moneymaker to like have a kid and then we create a podcast together. It's working for 2 Chainz. Podcast with his kid is great.
That's
2 Chainz, you got competition.
You got 2 years. I don't know if you'd want someone younger than 2. Unless you adopt and you just get them, you know.
Right.
You still might need to work through some stuff.
That's why we have a podcast.
There you go. You know what? That could be the topic of the podcast right there. I feel like that could lend itself to a little exploitation.
It's James Woods, a.k.a. That Yoga Dude. With Feel Free to Feel Free. Freedom is moving in and out without being caught up and held back by my own condition. My own condition. The old ways of doing things, seeing things, not letting them hold me back as I continuously move forward towards greater for yourself. Meditation helps me to take a deeper look at my conditioning. Have a deeper understanding of what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm going through. And not respond with anger, frustration, fear. Just looking at it for what it is and making the proper adjustments. One of the best places we can make those adjustments is from a place of calm, relaxation, and peace. Let's take a couple of breaths to get there. Softening the body. Gently breathing through the nose. Relax the arms. Deep every breath. Peace in the present. Release and relax. Practice intentionally being in the moment and letting go. Whatever no longer serves you. Breathing. Releasing. And as always, feeling free to feel free. And namaste. Peace.
Denise, I wanted to talk to you about a topic that we talked about within the last year.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about you coming on the podcast and talking about Black men's health.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels important just because, you know, now I'm in my late to mid-30s now. You know, I'm getting up there in age.
Yes, sir.
So.
Oh, you are my target demographic.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure a lot of my listeners are as well. So why is Black men's health so important to you?
So I started out, like I said, with my public health career being focused on global maternal health. And the way I got there is over the last, I'll say 20, 25 years, there's been a lot of progress in improving maternal health for a lot of people across the globe. But I was doing some research for some class, and I saw that there's still like a segment that are really hard to reach and really hard to improve their their health outcomes, essentially.
Yeah.
And in public health, there's this concept of like the last mile. And it's when you've done you've had successful interventions so that most of the population that you're targeting for an activity are good. But there's just that last mile you have to get to for everybody to be good. It's something that shows up a lot in work around HIV and maternal health.
Yeah.
And so there's just this segment of people who essentially I did work in Tanzania, and it's a country that I studied and spent some time in. I was there better part of a year. And I was looking at the health statistics, and it's women who live in birthing parents, but mostly in that space identify as women, I think, who live in rural areas and who are poor and low educated, who just have less of a chance to have a healthy pregnancy and healthy childbirth and then have a healthy infant.
Yeah.
And it feels like a little bit of a forgotten population, and they're not, but because it's hard to reach them, it's a little accepted that things are just going to be bad for them.
Yeah.
I'm just generally interested in the folk, in the people who aren't getting the kind of attention they deserve for whatever reason. So I did my MPH, I did my global health degree, and I came back to the States, and I was sitting on a park bench in Fort Greene with a friend who's also an artist, and he was in his early to mid 40s at the time. And he had lost some friends to, I think, like stroke or heart attack or something like that. But people who are in his age range, you know, maybe 50. And he was saying to me, shout out to Ty Allen. He said, you know, I wish, like, we spot each other at the gym. I wish we spotted each other in our health, you know, ask each other, like, when you got your cholesterol checked last. And so he's like, you know, let's do something. You have this degree now, let's do something. And we didn't end up doing anything. But in thinking about what we could do, I was looking at the stats.
Yeah.
And this was in 2015. And I was looking at the stats, and, you know, we know that Black men have the lowest life expectancy in the United States, and we kind of accept that to be true. And it made me think of these women in central Tanzania and other places where it's hard to get at them and really improve their lot in life for a lot of reasons when it comes to maternal health. And we just kind of accept that there are people we're not going to reach. But here in the United States, one where, you know, we have all the money to take care of everybody.
Yeah.
But to keep accepting that Black men just have the lowest life expectancy, even as everybody's rises, and even as Black men, their life expectancy does rise, but it's still the lowest. And there's no specific, like, targeting towards improving the health of Black men. And to me, that feels like a silent crisis. And so I've been thinking about this for 8 years now, which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
Thinking about it off and on, and then thinking about it as a doctoral student for 2.5 years. And the thing that I've come to is that men in their 30s and their 40s need to start paying attention to their health.
Yeah.
Because Black men in their 40s start dying from diabetes. They start dying from stroke. They start dying from cancer and heart disease. And of all of the racial groups in the United States, so we're talking about white, non-Hispanic Black, Hispanic, and then Asian, we're going to leave aside Native Americans and Pacific Islanders, not because they're not important, but because their health statistics are just so sad.
Yeah.
But even amongst those, so if you think about these chronic diseases that are, if not preventable, at least treatable.
Yeah.
And less fatal if you catch them early.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 of the 5 leading causes of death for Black men in the group between 40 and 44, stroke, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes.
Damn.
All of those things can be caught at an early stage, and many of them can be prevented. So your mid to late 30s, you know, how many men mid to late 30s are pre-diabetic or diabetic or have high cholesterol or are at risk for something? And they don't know because they don't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of reasons that Black men don't go to the doctor. And so the thing that I'm focused on in my little catchphrase is I want to make going to the doctor accessible and acceptable to Black men.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing all that.
It was it's a journey.
Yeah. And I definitely was taking it all in because it makes me think of my own health journey. And I would say that I go to the doctor regularly. Mm-hmm. I don't know how often it is regularly. At least like twice a year to get a physical. Sometimes I don't know what to ask or what, you know, when you do blood work and stuff like that, if they tell you everything's all good, you kind of just take right. it and everything being all good. And, oh, wow, this is something I guess I've never shared on the podcast, but I think I was told that I was pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. Both my grandmother's diabetic. Mm-hmm. My dad told me he's pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. His number kind of goes up mm-hmm. and down. And they told me that once at the doctor, but the last couple of times I went, the number was down, I guess maybe because yeah. I was exercising yeah. or, you know, just taking care of myself. But yeah, how do we even, like, where do we even begin with those conversations as Black men? Because like I said, I listening to you, I've never talked to my friends about, you know, health stuff in that yeah. way. You
and
know?
Y'all are an enlightened group of gentlemen. You are. I admire the, like, the friendship and the connection that you have with the friends of yours that I know.
I appreciate that.
It's something that I don't have with my friends.
Yeah.
And so y'all are enlightened and you talk about stuff and you support each other.
Yeah.
And so even to hear you, as his real enlightened brother, you know, with enlightened friends, be like, we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
And y'all, again, are in the age group where, I mean, we really start to feel our bodies in, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. 30s. The 30s are great and we yeah. know ourselves. But like you get mid to late 30s, feeling your body.
For sure. For sure. I feel like there's so much that we like as far as health wise mm-hmm. as men, and not just with that group of men in general, that we don't talk about. Because even, you know, getting up in age, for myself, I've had experience of like being really stressed out mm-hmm. and not being able to get an erection mm-hmm. and having this feeling and this fear all to mm-hmm. myself and mm-hmm. not having anybody to talk to just expressing it, just
yeah.
to, you know, share with somebody and somebody being like, oh, like, yeah, that's happened to me too.
Yeah, yeah.
But hearing sometimes the ways that people resolve that for themselves
right.
as opposed to really going get medical help or just talking to somebody about it.
Yeah. So I would say, I mean, part of how do we address this? That's part of why I'm getting a degree.
Yeah.
because it's not an easy answer. I will say that it's been really heartening to see the work that Black men are doing around their mental health and the level of vulnerability that so many men are willing to display amongst each other.
Yeah.
Because a big piece of this is it's just talking. And one of the key differences, I think, between men and women when it comes to health is that women just talk about it more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's just the socialization to be more open. We're not discouraged from being soft and vulnerable in that same way. We're not going to talk about it with everybody, but
right, for
you
sure.
know, mothers, sisters, girlfriends, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my favorite doctors have come from being referred by somebody else.
Yeah.
And you know, no woman will fault you for saying like, hey, I'm looking for a gynecologist. You know, do you like your gynecologist at
yeah.
work? It's a completely normal thing to ask a coworker if they like their gynecologist.
Yeah.
Because y'all have the same insurance.
Yeah.
You know you have the same insurance.
Yeah.
And like that gynecology visit is exposing. You have your legs up in the air and there is somebody who is in your private bits. They are feeling on your breast. And so it's a very intimate thing. And it is very natural for women to be like, hey, I need a new gynecologist.
Yeah.
And to know that you're saying, hey, the person who feels on your breast and puts their hands inside your vagina, do you like them enough to recommend them to me?
Man, that makes sense.
You know, it's a thing that it would just, and part of it, I think, is that like the reproductive health for us is inside. It's so internal. So it's already mm-hmm. very intimate. And so we know we have that shared intimacy.
Yeah.
Of this being part of how we take care of our health.
Yeah.
And so similar kind of like vulnerability that men are starting to share around mental health, feeling open and safe and knowing that it needs to happen with your bodily health as well
mm-hmm.
is one of the things that I think needs to happen. And it happens in other spaces. It happens with HIV,
yeah.
like a lot of things that have to do with men's health. And like, if you look up men's health, there's a lot around HIV.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot around like erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to older men, then you get to the chronic diseases. But like, really, it's around like sexual health. And they'll do like support groups or like peer groups around HIV. I was just reading a study about heterosexual men in New York. And them doing like this education project and men talking to each other about it.
Oh, wow.
But that just doesn't exist. And it's not talked about for diabetes, for just like taking care of your general body.
Yeah. And I was going to agree with you because I feel like I have had conversations with my friends about like just sexual wellness, and that is just so interesting. But I'm curious to go back mm-hmm. to like the leading factors of our health issues. Like at what age should we start like getting tested for this stuff? Like,
yeah,
should we know our family history?
Like 100%. For those who are able to and know their family, mm-hmm. yeah, know your family history.
Yeah.
Talk to your parents, your grandparents, your cousins, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Learn that family history because there are a lot of things that are genetic.
Yeah.
And then, so this is me kind of ballparking, but just in general, I mean, the general rule or guidelines or suggestions, I guess, is for people like in their 30s to go once a year, once every 2 years for a physical.
Yeah.
And then my suggestion is around 35.
Okay.
You make sure that you have a place you know you can go. So mm-hmm. great if you're going every year for a physical, but even if you skip a year, know that if you have a place that you can go where you trust the folks, you know how to get there, you know you could get an appointment. So if something does come up,
yeah,
you're not starting from point zero.
Yeah.
Because it can be hard to start from point zero. Especially if you're not somebody who is comfortable or would think to ask for a referral for like, you know, a doctor.
Yeah.
And it's easy to do. I don't know if you like need a podiatrist or need a physical therapist, you know, that's kind of easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me in therapy, I feel like I've done a pretty good job at picking therapists,
mm-hmm.
but I'm curious to know, how do you pick Ooh. A doctor? Like, how do you know a doctor
yeah.
fits you? Because I'll be honest, most of the doctors I've had, I don't know if they felt so invested
yep.
in me.
Yep.
It was kind of just like, here you go, and just kind of go about your yep. way. But how do you decide what is a yeah. good doctor for you?
So that's the accessible part of my spiel. Accessibility to me means that you're going to a doctor where you feel seen as a complete person, where your humanity is just like acknowledged from when you walk in the door. And that's not guaranteed for anybody who looks like us.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart. I do a lot of ZocDoc. Like mm-hmm. I do ZocDoc. I do health grades. I do Google reviews. I do my research,
yeah.
you know, because I want to make sure that when I'm seeing a doctor, whether it's just physical health or a specific like injury or something, that they are known for like decent bedside manner,
mm-hmm.
that the front desk person isn't somebody who like cusses people out.
Yeah.
And I've gone to doctors that were recommended to me and, you know, were cool, and some it's still hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing that I'm trying to do is not easy
yeah.
because there are a lot of things that need to change. So, you know, the acceptable of like getting Black men okay to want to talk about these things and want to go to a doctor, and then making sure that doctor they go to is somebody who's not going to make them feel less than, or that it's not going to be an uncomfortable experience for one reason or another.
Yeah.
It's hard because as motivated as I am to go to the doctor, it's still hard for me to find a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that is important is having a doctor to go to.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like trial and error, and it sucks, and I wish it was easier than that. And that's why talking to people about who they see
mm-hmm.
it can be really helpful, because your friend has already vetted somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough, but it's not impossible. And then sometimes you love a doctor and then they move.
Yeah.
There's a gynecologist that me and another friend just happened to be seeing. We both happened to see her, and then she moved to LA, and this was probably more than 5 years ago at this point, years ago that she moved. But it's so important that you keep trying, because you want somebody who you've established some trust with, or at least a facility, even if it's the kind of place where you're not seeing the same doctor all the time. You want to feel like the folks in there care about you.
Yeah.
Or at least have the kind of practice where you're not going to feel like a paycheck. You know, you walk into urgent care and I always feel like I am a fee before I'm a patient.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish it was easier.
Yeah. What advice would you give to anyone who is afraid of going to the doctor?
So I know there's a few reasons why someone might be afraid. And one that's come up when I've talked to men, when I've talked to my friends, is if I go to the doctor and something's wrong, then I have to deal with that thing being wrong. And if I don't go to the doctor, then I don't have to confront that thing that's wrong. And that's real. But that thing that may or may not be wrong, like if you have an illness, it's still going to be there whether you go to the doctor or not.
Yeah.
And where it can get complicated is, Fred, so I did some interviews with some friends to kind of get their sense of how they thought about their risk of illness.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends was saying, you know, something that can keep men out of the doctor's office is, okay, so I get diagnosed with this thing. Now what? Do I have the time and the money to take care of it?
Yeah.
Like, can I actually take care of this thing? And that's real. And what can you do? I mean, I guess the thing that I would say to someone who's scared is that there are people who will miss you if you're gone.
Mm.
And the less you know about what's going on in your body, the less, maybe control isn't the right word, but I guess less opportunity you have to live the kind of life that you want. You know, we can't prevent becoming injured or disabled. We are all temporarily able-bodied.
Yeah.
But if you find out that you're pre-diabetic, then you have a lot more agency over deciding what to do about that.
Yeah.
And while I'm on the topic of like deciding what to do, I want everybody to like go to the doctor and know what your health status is. And then what you do about that is up to you.
Yeah. That's
so fair. Whether you are a CMOS and a CMOS twigs and berries type of person.
Yeah.
You are, I'm now going to go to CrossFit. Your supplements, your, you know, whether you're a Dr. Sebi or I want Pfizer to take care of this for me or whatever in between.
Yeah.
I completely respect that.
That's real.
But I want folks to know what's going on so that they can make those decisions.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. And how can we better support each other in, I guess, this journey?
I mean, just starting the conversation, you know. You're someone in your mid to late 30s and you say like, hey, you know what? I'm starting to get some aches and pains that weren't there before, you know, and I'm thinking about like how often do I need to be seeing a doctor? Like, do you go to the doctor?
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to my dad and he was talking about our family history of heart disease. And that's something that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
You know, is that something that like y'all have in your family or like just kind of starting the conversation.
Yeah.
And creating the space for like whatever comes of that. Inviting vulnerability, supporting each other and kind of like, hey, you said you were going to like get that tooth checked out because oral health is important too.
Yeah.
You said you were going to get that tooth checked out. How'd that go?
Yeah.
You know, that's what comes to mind. A little bit deeper into my doctoral work, I might have some other answers for you because I will have talked to lots of men about what they think.
Yeah.
So I'm still kind of in that discovery phase myself.
I appreciate you sharing that.
After you finish listening to this episode, make sure you take a minute in whatever streaming service you are listening to listen to my latest music project called Desert Thoughts. There's two versions of it. One is on SoundCloud. One is on all streaming services, featuring Yanni Blue, Eddie Wayne, DDM, and so much more. You guys will really enjoy it. It's like an inspirational piece that I needed some motivation while I was in the desert. So I wanted to share that with y'all. So take a listen to some of my deepest inner thoughts that I experienced while being in the desert on this nomadic journey. It's available now. Check it out.
Our next segment is sponsored by Feel Free to Feel Free.
Ooh.
It's called Five Questions of Freedom.
Ooh, okay.
So you can answer these questions any way you like. First question being teaching yoga or participating in yoga?
Both.
Okay.
Both, because teaching, there's a teaching practice and then there's the like student practice, I guess.
Yeah.
And they can be very intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you when we were going to that yoga class last week, it's hard for me to fully stay on my mat sometimes if I see someone kind of struggling.
Yeah.
Because that teacher brain doesn't shut off unless maybe I take my glasses off and I just can't see. Or sometimes I practice with my eyes closed because I just want to be really in tune.
Yeah.
I love teaching and I miss it. But the practicing is also just so, it's so important and it can be real like juicy and good.
Yeah. Okay. Second question. If you could have a conversation with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Ooh. Who would I want to have a conversation with? There's so many people flashing through my mind. This one feels kind of corny, but Barack Obama.
Okay.
Barack Obama. And like, I like to call him Cousin Barry sometimes, you know, and if this makes its way to him, like, shout out to you, first of all, Mike Brown, for your podcast getting to, you know, president. But so Barack Obama, his dad was Kenyan, but his dad and my dad are from the same like tribal linguistic. Oh, wow. And so his dad was a Luo. My dad was an Acholi, which is a Luo subgroup. And so we both are Africans from the same tribe.
Wow.
His mom was from Kansas. My mom was from Jersey, but she had me in Denver, in Colorado. Yeah. So like neighboring states, neighboring countries in terms of our fathers.
Yeah.
And I feel like he and I both at some point in our lives like made the decision to be Black. In a way, I think there is sometimes a choice for biracial people.
Yeah.
Especially biracial Black people, whether to like lean into or just like fully embrace like being Black.
Yeah.
Because there are folks who identify as like biracial and that's it. No shade to that.
Yeah.
But I remember in the 2010 census, I feel like that's the first census I filled out. Yes, it was. It was definitely the first census that I filled out because I was 17. And putting Black and just being like, I am declaring for the federal government and whoever needs to know that I'm Black. I'm not multiracial in this way because being Black feels more important than declaring my multitude of races. Because when I was trying to catch a cab after working late on Lexington and 50th Street back in the day before Uber, I was Black before I was anything else.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I'm of Czech and Irish lineage as well doesn't matter when people look at me.
Yeah.
And so choosing to be Black and then make the focus of our work, at least to some extent, because he did the organizing in Chicago, right? And really leaning into that, like, I'm Black and I care about Black people in this way. And it doesn't mean I don't care about my white family. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't care about people in general, but there's a kinship with Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious about what that kind of journey was. I want him to know that he and I are distant cousins. We're both Leos. His birthday is the 4th of August. Mine is the 21st. We're 17 days apart. You know, it's just a kinship there. Second runner up, though, would be Trevor Noah.
Okay.
Similar biracial.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hilarious.
Yeah.
So if I couldn't get Barack, I would go for Trevor Noah.
Well, you know, they say New York is the city of dreams. So Barack Obama, if you hear this, let's make it happen.
We would have a great conversation. Fantastic.
Oh, let's see. I have three more, right?
Okay. Yep.
Beyonce or Rihanna?
Ooh. So I'm going based off personality.
Okay.
And Beyonce.
Okay.
Because I have a friend, actually, who was in a space with Beyonce. My friend's cousin was in Solange's, like, entourage for a hot second. And so my friend was in a space with Beyonce, mm-hmm. and Beyonce, when she's not Sasha Fierce, she is real chill.
Yeah.
And like quiet is what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
She's not that stage persona. Honestly, I'm a little intimidated by Rihanna. Rihanna is just like, she just seems like so cool. And I don't even know what I would do with that. And so I feel like I would vibe with Beyonce's energy a little bit more when it comes to their music. I mean, more Beyonce than Rihanna. I think Rihanna's just like this really cool person and I appreciate it, but I appreciate it more from afar.
Yeah.
And I feel like Beyonce is a little bit more approachable, which is a funny thing to say about Beyonce.
That makes sense, though. That makes sense. Let's go. Fourth question. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, goodness gracious. So much. What advice would I give to myself? I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 30.
Okay.
And in graduate school, halfway through my first year of my master's program. And going through that much of life, not knowing that my brain had trouble with staying focused on tasks and understanding the passage of time and organizing things and being really having a lot of difficulty with tedium and tedious tasks,
mm-hmm.
it made me feel like I was broken.
Oh, wow.
I felt like I was broken for so long. I felt like all of these things that I later learned had to do with my brain chemistry, they felt like personality flaws and like deep, deep personality flaws. And the thing that I would tell my younger self is that you're not broken. You're just different. And if you can embrace the fact that you are different and just make your peace with that, then you can figure out what that difference means.
Yeah.
And how to kind of function and flow.
That's beautiful. And our last question is, what reminder do you want to send to your future self?
Pause and breathe and reflect on what actually is versus what you think is. Don't get so caught up in how you're experiencing things. Take a pause, take a breath, and think about what's actually going on and look at it a little bit more objectively and pull yourself out of whatever that like mucky murkiness is. If you're in that space, you probably don't need to be fully in that space.
I appreciate you sharing that. I needed that today.
You are so welcome. That's for future me and for current you.
I appreciate
honestly,
that.
Honestly, for current me too.
Yeah. Denise, where can the people find you?
Where can they find me? About town in Brooklyn. If you hang out in Bed-Stuy, Tompkins Avenue, shout out to Life Wellness Center and Bedvine Brew. Where else that'd be? On the interwebs. Right now, I have kind of a minimal presence, but I am on Instagram. It used to be Spread Love and Yoga, and then the pandemic hit, and I didn't have a chance to teach yoga. So now I'm Spread Love and _, which is kind of a fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that.
Spread Love and _. Spread Love and Public Health felt really cheesy, and Public Health Bay is already taken.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just got back on, I guess it's now X, and my name on there is Podcast Poppy.
Podcast Poppy. Okay, Podcast Poppy. I used to be Casual Chick on Twitter way back in the day. And now I think I'm just Denise Marie, which is what my mom would call me when I was in trouble. Yeah, I am on Twitter. And apparently I'm also on Threads.
Okay, I'm on Threads also. I don't use it that much. But
yeah, I'm mostly an observer.
Maybe we should make it popular.
I'm on TikTok too, but like I don't. It's just as an observer. And when I figure out what my public health brand is, I'll make sure to let folks know on Instagram.
That sounds good.
Then, you can find me at Downstate Health Sciences University as a third year doctoral student and just roaming about Brooklyn when I'm not in class.
That's what's up. That's all good. Denise, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Of course. And we definitely are going to have you back. Now, like I said, you're a part of the universe. So
I'm a part of the universe.
You have to be a recurring guest.
That's great. Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yes.
If you could be, because when you said Marvel Universe, it made me think of who the superhero that I would be.
Yeah.
But if you could be any superhero, who would you be?
If I could be.
Or like which superhero kind of resonates with you the most?
Like maybe like Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe Spider-Man, honestly.
Okay. What about Spider-Man?
It was youthful, kind of nerdy, but kind of cool, you
know?
Okay. That feels like me.
Yeah. Mine is Storm from X-Men, and it's a really nerdy public health reason. Because she controls the weather, she can intervene when there's drought that causes famine, and she can intervene when there's like monsoon rains that cause like cholera and things. And so weather can influence people's health so much. And so having that ability to kind of prevent lives being lost.
Yeah.
Through the weather.
Yeah.
Storm also. So already black.
Right.
You know, my hair is when it's not blonde because of help from external parties, very salt and pepper and very close to getting just salt.
That's funny. And actually, I'm going to take back Spider-Man. And I'm going to go with, I don't remember her name. I'm not really a big Marvel fan like that. I said that, just use that reference because I have my own universe.
Yes, you
do. But the girl from Guardians of the Galaxy, she's able to tap into people's feelings.
Oh, yeah, with like the little antennas.
That would be me.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. I like that.
I appreciate that. Denise, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you, Mike Brown, for having a show.
Of course. Thank y'all for listening. This is Mike Brown, and this is The Art of Letting Go. Peace.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of The Art of Letting Go. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, as well as leave a comment. Let people know what you think. Let me know what you think. I do read the comments. Yes, I do. I heard everybody saying I was homeless last week. Also, if you would like to support the show further, you can sign up for the Patreon, where I give a lot of exclusive content. I've been sharing some new music that I've been working on, workshopping some new podcasts, and also building a community of people that are healing and growing in real time. And I would love for y'all to be a part of that. Also, you can share the show with anybody that you feel like would benefit from it. I have some new merch coming soon. If you would like for us to produce your podcast, please reach out. We want to help more of you tell your story. So thank you guys for listening. This is Mike Brown, and this is The Art of Letting Go.